Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome to the Midnight Garden. I am your host, Mudtoe Sasquatch. Thank you for joining me this evening in my little corner of the internet. And please join me here between the truffles and the lotus roots as we speak of matters great and small. It's another wonderful Friday night here in the heartland. No snow tonight. That was fortunate for me. As I was driving here from my large city in the Midwest to my parents' home in a very small town in the Midwest. Made for easy driving, and of course I'm grateful for that. Always try to express the gratitudes. They tend to make life flow much more easily. At least that's what my New Age friends tell me. And it is true. It's also a cornerstone of the 12-step program, which I'm also familiar with. Seeking out and identifying what you're grateful for and then expressing it out loud. It's a great, great energy translator. I'm a big believer in it. So anyway, that's where I am. I came down here from the big city earlier this evening. I want to thank my my daughter and my son-in-law for taking me out to dinner tonight, a birthday dinner. This is Mudtoe's birthday week, 53 years of age. Very grateful to have gotten this far. And also very grateful to the, as I said, to the daughter and the son-in-law for going out of their way to feed me. Take me out for something that I like very much and that I miss very much, which is sushi. I've spent a lot of money on sushi over the years. Thinking I've probably spent more money on sushi than I spent in strip clubs. And that's saying something. So, but times being what they are, I've not had the luxury of spending so much time in the sushi bars. And also, my favorite ones have been closing at an alarming rate. I don't know if those two things are related, but there's my favorite sushi place is now a big hole in the ground. It's located in a very trendy portion of my city called the Short North, where there's a lot of changes going on. And the scuttlebutt was that the people who run the Short North were interested in the sushi bar's parking lot because parking is practically non-existent downtown. The gentleman didn't want to give it up, and so the powers that be were going to use their municipal might to force him to do so. So it's before it came to that, he sold out and went away. And now the building is gone, a place where he spent a lot of time in contemplation, and contemplation accompanied with the eating of nigiri and the consumption of plum wine. Took a couple of, I have to say three or four most recent dates I took to that sushi bar. It's called Haiku. And I guess I can go ahead and advertise it because it doesn't exist anymore. And then there was a lot of art there, and they did live music. They had live jazz at the sushi bar. And you were encouraged to write your own haikus and stick them up on the wall. I always thought that was fun. And they did a very nice job on the food. So it was a place that I wanted to be, you know, wanted to have other people there. But not a lot of my friends, really, the sushi wasn't a thing they wanted to do for whatever reason. There were a number of reasons. Did take, as I said, a few ladies there to try to impress them. Really didn't work so well, but hey, what are you going to do? I went there more for me, and perhaps that was the issue. Perhaps the issue why it didn't wow the woman folk as I'd hoped it would is because it was more about me than it was about them. So, lesson learned. So that was the first most favoritist sushi bar, and the second one is located in the campus area. pretty much within walking. It was within walking distance of the first place I lived, and longer walking distance, but I'd say walking distance still from the second place where I lived. And they got to know me. I went in there, and the owner one time said to one of his newer servers that I was a normal customer. I wasn't quite sure how to take that. I think he meant that I was a frequent customer. But as a normal customer, I was there quite a bit. As I say, financially, from a financial point of view, probably more than I should have been. But, the last couple times I've been there, I noticed the crowd was rather sparse. And then the most recent time I was in the area, they're about a half a block from my doctor's office. So that would be I'd go to the doctor's office and get all of my pep talk about my diabetes and whatnot. And then I go a half a block down the road and have white rice, which is very bad for your diabetes, and other things, out there at the sushi bar. Well, I went out there and saw that they were gone. They relocated to an outer area of the city, which is what a lot of the trendier places are doing. Sort of the interior of the city continues to hollow out as the economic activity heads to the suburbs and the hinterlands outside the city, a process which I revile but can do nothing about, really, other than complain about it here on these airwaves. But boy, it certainly is happening. They have the entire campus area, which where I lived for most of the time I've lived in the big city, undergoing massive changes as the university expands its reach. And one wonders why. I mean, it seems almost as if, it's expansion for expansion's sake. We need to get bigger, get bigger, go home is the phrase, I believe, now. And it's really a bastardization of capitalism, as I understand it. Capitalism is a process by which a need is identified and a number of concerns come forward to try and meet that need. And the concern that does the best job of creating value, quality, delivery, price, all the combination of things that put that together that please the customer the most, they get the bulk of the business. And so that success is supposed to be tied to quality and satisfying the need. But what how it really works is that the concern that first succeeds uses all that money they generate to eliminate their competition. And then they're just the only one left and they can do whatever they want. And also, as part of this whole idea, is it becomes the idea of expansion, get big. So get big even though there really isn't a reason for you to get big. Just do it. And weaker things, maybe better things, maybe better ideas get pushed to the side. Happens all the time. And we get stuck with Windows Vista. But let's not have that conversation now. I've had it a number of times, and it's really, I'm sure people are kind of bored with it. But anyway, unless I had, again, this is the way it goes on this show. If this is the first time you've listened to it, I will tell you, I had absolutely no intention of discussing any of that stuff tonight. I come in with only the vaguest ideas, and people who listen to the show a lot are saying, yes, we know. But I come in with only the vaguest ideas of what I might talk about, and then I let it take off, because my only real, well, no, I won't say it that way. I am concerned that sometimes this gets to be a poor, poor, pitiful me kind of show, and that's not the purpose. The purpose is for me to communicate ideas that are coming to me. I won't say channeled. It's not channeled. It's not that sort of thing. It's my intention to be in alignment with the intentions of spirit, so that what I'm saying is purposeful, even if I don't know what the purpose is. The purpose is for me to say words that reach someone who needs to hear them. And I may never know whether that happened or not. In all probability, I will never know if it happened or not. But somehow the generation of words, whether it's through me or through someone else, has a whole hell of a lot to do with turning around this negative thing that we're all in now. And I felt called to be a part of it, so I'm here. And that might just be the most coherent way I've ever expressed all of that. So cheers to me for that. I'll accept. I'll pat myself on the back. What the hell? Something is happening that I'm not... Is that coming from the... I'm hearing words, and they're not coming from my phone. They're coming from someplace else, and I'm wondering... My brother has his apartment downstairs. I'm wondering if my brother's, you know, listening, entertaining himself right now, because he is an insomniac, just as I am. See, I have my computer's going too, because as soon as I'm done, at the moment I'm done with this show, I will go to bed. But I have to have, I'm one of those people who has to have something going. And even if it's barely audible, it has to be, there's something going. So I have some, the best I've found for sleep, the best I've found is recordings of the old Japanese Iron Chef show. For whatever reason, that just, they just put me right out, so... I've got those going now so that I don't have to waste time getting all that together after I hang up the phone, after I end the show. It'll be all ready for me. I can just put the phone down and shut off the light and be ready to go. But I don't think that's what I'm hearing. First of all, it's coming from the wrong side of the room. No, maybe it is. Maybe I've got some sort of weird echo. Maybe it's coming through the phone. If that's true, you would certainly be able to hear it. Can you hear it? I say, it's sort of a Mr. Rogers kind of question. I throw that out there. Can you hear it? I don't know. It doesn't seem like it ought to be that loud. Well, anyway, that's throwing me a bit for a loop. Okay, I'm here. Back at the folks' place this weekend. I was here last weekend. Back here this weekend because my brother and I are going to a concert tomorrow. We're going to see the local symphony orchestra. Well, not local to here. It's a town a little bit up the street. They have a symphony orchestra, and they're going to be playing some things, including the Planets, if you're familiar with that. And I was going to have the name of that composer in front of me, but I don't have it. But it is a famous piece of music. It doesn't occur to me, you know, right off the top of my head who wrote it. But that's being played, and I think there's some other stuff. And I'm excited about it because I think I may have reported on the show some months ago that I went to, in my city with the lovely Twilight Evening Star. We both went to see a performance of Mozart's Requiem, and I was very—it's the first time I had ever heard music played, I guess, on that scale. Well, that's not quite right. I went and saw the Columbus Pops Orchestra. I just mentioned the name of my city. I don't know why it's important to me that I try and keep that anonymous, but I guess it's a thing I started from the very first time I started doing these shows. I didn't want to say where I was from. I'm from Columbus, Ohio. It's a very large city in the Midwest, with a very bad hockey team. But anyway, they have, there's this open area in the middle of the city called the Commons, and they have concerts there. And the Columbus Pops was there with the Ohio State University Marching Band. I guess I'd almost have to give away where I lived if I said that. I mean, what's the significance of having the local college marching band? Well, they are the Ohio State University Marching Band, playing together with the symphony orchestra, and you know, it was very, very impressive. But you're outdoors in a big open space. You know, they have a music shell. So that's, I mean, that aims all the music in your direction. But it just was not. We went to see we went to see Requiem, it was in a much smaller space, and that seemed to make it more powerful. You're inside, you're enclosed, you could hear the, feel the music in your chest and in your gut, you know. And so I'm anxious to kind of repeat that experience, although I don't think, as I recall, I've heard the planets before. I don't think it's quite that dramatic as Requiem is. Maybe I may have, there are things about it I may have forgotten. The last time I heard it, I was in Houston. I was there for a conference, and I was indulging in one of the activities. They took us to the Space Center, and I got on the wrong tram and didn't go to the Space Center. I went to a space museum instead. And they had an IMAX movie, the real IMAX, where the screen is 15 stories high and all that. And it was a compilation of surface photographs taken by various satellites on different planets. And you see where this is going, right? They had set that to the music of the planets. So the planets was playing over the planets. And it was pretty cool. I was, for most of the time, I was the only one in there. At one point, there was a young family came in, and of course, the kids wouldn't sit still, for that. But not only, I guess maybe the computer animation might have held their attention for a while, but they weren't going to stay for classical music. There was no way. But I remember thinking, this works. The music this composer, whose name I think almost slipped out of my mouth there. There's a piece of music in each of this. It's sort of a suite. It is a suite of music that is, and there's a piece that's connected, each of them is connected to a planet and sort of reflecting the, I think the intention of the composer was to reflect the mythological character of that, the name that's assigned to the planet. But in each of the cases of this movie, it also seemed to reflect the physical character of the planet. This is what, this kind of sounds like Venus. This is what Venus would sound like if it was music. This is what Mars would sound like if it was music. This is Jupiter. I remember Jupiter being, the big grand, it's king of the planets and all that. And that was the way that the music was orchestrated to reflect that. So, like the music. It gives me sort of assurance that I'm going to like it because I've heard it before and I liked it, even if I don't remember a lot about it. I heard it before and I liked it, so I know I'm extremely unlikely to be disappointed this time around. Unless they play it badly or something, I doubt that'll happen. And it's a nice old theater and a pretty good sized theater for a town of this size to have. They get some, what was that noise I just made? I don't know what that was all about. I know what it's about. I'm trying to shift between thoughts, and then I got stuck halfway in between a word, and it didn't happen. I've been there two times. One time was to see Cats. And Cats is kind of interesting. I got through it because I knew a couple of people in the cast, and I was there to see them. So that was cool. And the other time I was there was to see The Nutcracker. And there's kind of a story behind that. I was hot and heavy attending 12-step meetings at that time, at least one a day. And I was lamenting, kind of like happens on this show sometimes, in the meeting, the fact, I had a female acquaintance who suggested we go see The Nutcracker. There was no way I could get the money together to do it. And this is a consequence of my drinking and drugging and whatnot. And after the meeting, someone walked up to me and gave me two tickets. So, hey, great. And, and you got to make sure you express gratitude for something like that. So the day comes for the performance, and my female acquaintance decides she doesn't want to go. An old boyfriend has come into town, and she doesn't want to upset him by going with me. So I end up going alone. I'm telling you, as I'm walking in that place, and I'm just hoping, the ground opens up and just swallows everybody and everything. I hate everybody. I hate everything. And I go to my seat, and of course my seat next to me is empty, you know. And the music starts up, and the great thing about the Nutcrackers is the music is just terribly familiar. You hear it all the time, you know, in TV commercials and movies and whatnot. They borrow this music, and so it cranks up, and you say, "Oh, yeah, okay, I'm in a friendly place." You know, I've heard this music before, and it's, you know, it's dancing, and it's they have in this particular production they have local kids doing the dancing, so that's nice. And I'm watching it, and this feeling of hatred for the entire human race just begins to dissipate, and you know, that's the power of a live performance. That's the power of having an audience, people around you. I think that it becomes, at least for me, it becomes impossible to maintain that level of hatred for a long period of time. It's just it gets absorbed, it gets diverted, it gets drained away, and the universe says, "Mudtoe, shut up and watch the show. This is a beautiful thing. It's too beautiful for you to miss it, just because you're gonna sit here and hate." And that was a most valuable lesson for me, knowing that no matter how bad it got, it was possible for me to turn it off. And you know, you could lock it in and say, "Okay, yeah, it's possible to turn it off if I'm at the Nutcracker." Or if I'm at, you know, some sort of, you know, performance of that type with people around. No, I don't think. I think that facilitated things. And maybe it's a matter of that's, I needed it on that day because I'm just not very good at deflecting and diffusing my emotions. I didn't have at that time a lot of experience in making that kind of thing happen. But now that I've seen that it can happen, I can look for other ways. I can look for other conduits. I can be aware of the places I can go, the things I can do, the mindset I can adopt to make those feelings go away. And the reason I'm mindful of this now, first of all, because the opportunity to go to this concert with my brother came up. But second, I'm in the midst of processing a job offer. And it's in retail, which is not strictly where I saw myself. But it's, you know, what I've seen of it is it's a smaller scale retail. It's a nationally known brand, but a smaller scale. It's not, you know, not the Walmart scale. It's not the Lowe's scale. It's on a scale where I'm reasonably going to be, you know, going to know and be able to work with everybody, you know, that you know, I'm going to be able to work with. So it's an issue of that. Of that team and the people that are in the team, and the things that are done in the store, you know, most of which are a matter of routine, and this is something I can adapt myself to, because it's not, you know, not a huge level of physical activity like I was dealing with at FedEx, a temporary job I had there over Christmas. I think it will be simple for me to learn, and I bring skills to the job. Is a lot of things they talked about where the people from the it's a franchise, and people come in from the big company to do audits, and I have experience in that, you know, in preparing for audits And my impression was nobody who's working there does. So maybe that's a niche for me to maybe start clawing my way up the rock wall. You know, this is something I know that the people who are working here don't necessarily know. So it's a thing I can do, and it's a thing I can teach. So I'm excited about those things. But where my anger management might need to come in is, okay, they want me, they've offered me the job, but I have to go through a background check. You know, the background check people send me my piece of paper that I have to electronically sign to give them the permission they need to look through my stuff. And there's a list of stuff that, you know, I'm authorized. These are things they could look at. Okay, not necessarily saying they're going to look at it, not necessarily saying that the people I'm going to work for are going to be interested in seeing it. But they could look at my financial history, which is extremely checkered. It is a bad financial history. Now, I don't even know if that's important to employers anymore. I know 20 years ago, the last time that I was out of work for a serious long time, like I have been now, I was applying for a job at Walmart, mentioned that I had a bankruptcy on my record and they wouldn't even talk to me any further. Now, I don't know if that still exists. I would think, you know, that if something like that were a potential problem, that I would have heard about it during the interview process. But then again, I also went for an interview for a nutrition study I was going to do, which I was really interested in because it's through the university and they provide all of your food because they're trying to make, and then you go in and get blood tests. They're trying to gauge exactly what it is that they're giving you, what changes it's doing in your body. And, you know, I like getting free stuff and, can always stand to lose a few pounds if that's the effect. But we get an hour and a half through this interview, and it comes up that I have diabetes. They say, oh, well, you can't do this. There's something like that's, you know, just, you know, drop dead, we can't go any further, that's it. Wouldn't that be something you would ask up front? Wouldn't that be something that would be like, you know, first on the list you'd ask? And so that's sort of how I feel about this, you know, the things on my financial record. If there are things that might be on anybody's financial record, I mean, we're not talking about felonies here. Lots of people have bankruptcies and other, you know, negative sort of financial bad things on their record. Wouldn't that be? See, but that's logic. I'm utilizing logic, and that can be terribly dangerous. You just don't know where logic's going to take you. Where no one has gone before. Okay, well, I've made it through another show. I want to thank you all for being patient and for listening. I will be back next week, hopefully with good news about this job thing. It, hopefully will lift me up to a place where I can maybe do a little more about these world's problems than just sit here and throw random words into the internet. Okay, I'm done. Time for bed. Thanks for listening. Have a pleasant good evening.